From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
Good morning. Welcome to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning, August 9th. A week and 2 days into August. Who thought we would be talking in recap about the Travers? But we are this year, as it came a little bit early, but it was still the marquee event and firmly established the three-year-old leader in the clubhouse heading into the Kentucky Derby with Tisdale with a big performance yesterday. A little bit different over there, but again, still a big day of racing.
Not just the leader in the clubhouse, but maybe chasing some potential competitors away. This was spectacular. Yeah. There's no even description of how dominant and how facile this was. I went into it knowing, okay, he can win, he should win, he's the heavy favorite, et cetera, goes off a 1-2, but not like that.
Yeah, it was hard to imagine that was going to happen. I liked the experience. I went with them. You know, the upstart, of course, was Uncle Chuck. It looked like around the turn, maybe we would get that duel, and we'll look at it in a minute. I didn't introduce ourselves. Seth Merrill, Steve Bick, in here every Sunday morning with Loose on the Lead, and we continue here. What are we, four weeks in now? Yeah, 4 weeks in.
Well, we had that spectacular preview show.
Yes, so... so we're 4-plus weeks in? How would we rank that?
You're getting punchy. We're hitting the midway point this week, and Seth's already reaching for the wire. The problem is he can't go to Maine for those little weekend getaways, those Monday, Tuesday getaways that keep him fresh and keep him that youthful glow.
A little fried clam and lobster roll break and a little time on the beach. I didn't get. Although I can go over to Eddie F's and grab
now
a
you're
lobster
talking.
Roll. And congratulations to them. Jasmine Esket.
That was tough. She came so close the other day. And Gary's horses are running really well.
And I will toss in yours. Ran a nice third the other day. Yeah, Kid Chocolate, who blew the first turn, and then made a nice late run to get third in the photo. That was a nice run from Kid Chocolate.
There were a couple of things that happened, by the way, in that spot, because Manny Franco, and congratulations to Manny. This, in a lot of ways, this is a much bigger win for him than the Travers, than the Belmont. Belmont in name, the distance adjustment, but this really is the next level win, and obviously there's more to come. We'll talk about what might end up being a three-year-old season for the ages, honestly, with him. I mean, the way things potentially shape up. But Manny came over on us with that four horse, that implied volatility or whatever the hell it was called, and that kind of hurt Tyler Gaffalione's momentum. Gaffalione, by the way, it's all meshing for him. He's riding terrific. Yeah. And so then he re-engaged, and this was the first time around two turns for Kid Chocolate. So I think the turn came up as a surprise pretty quickly to him. And I'll say something else. He also had the wet. It was mushy and wet, the top of the soil. Horses weren't sinking down too deep, but the top was throwing clods. And that was off of the big rain on Wednesday. And the inner turf, there is plenty of discussion to be had about horses failing to really make those sharper turns. And especially coming from downstate, where the Belmont turf courses, even the inner at Belmont, is much more expansive. And horses have a much more gradual, and not every horse corners, adroitly. So that, I think I'd like to get him on the melon and a little bit more of a gradual kind of a turn. But anyway, from that point, he came running, and Tyler Gaffalione had, he was thrilled with him. And
Very pleased. All right, why don't we take a look at the Travers? Because we have the entire race racked up, so we'll watch him coming right out of the gate. Number six will be Tisdale. Number four, Max Player. Number eight, South Bend. Uncle Chuck, the Baffert upstart that went off as the second choice, is the number three horse. And Uncle Chuck kind of takes control, and as we'll see him eventually hit the far turn, it looks like it's going to be engaged, but then Tiz the Law just kind of makes it a little bit of a laugher as they come into the stretch. Caracaro made a nice late run. I showed earlier some post-race comments on the handicappers report, and Javier Castellano was pretty happy with Caracaro's late run and said, you know, still a lightly raced horse, and he wants to meet up again somewhere down the road. I'm not sure it's going to work out for him, but
the Derby is going to be where they meet up next.
Yeah.
And speaking of Caracaro, Gustavo Legato gets another horse in the Derby. Bodie Express is running today, so Gustavo with another shot today. That horse is a price candidate for success at Churchill. So keep Caracaro in mind. Keep your eye on the seven here, easy in those yellow silks. When it comes to what happens up front, Uncle Chuck, this was a lot to ask. If you wanted to believe that he was good enough, and I did. I thought he might come in and be, you know, really everything that Arrogate was. You can see he's being asked here, and Manny Franco has only leaned forward. He hasn't asked anything of Tiz the Law yet. That's what makes this so just remarkable. And look at how Johnny's pumping, and look at Manny look between his legs at who might be around. The ears go up for Tiz the Law, and goodbye. I mean, this was just, he gives him one pop there, and that's it.
Castellano says, hey, I came up on him, and all of a sudden, boom, he's gone.
Yeah, well, that right-hander kind of gave him a reminder, and it also straightened him out. Now Manny canters him home in 2:09.5, and obviously the last 16th of the mile, he's cruising here. This is unbelievable. And you know, there's something about this performance that, and look at him. He's not ready to fit, not ready to pull up. He's crazed. This was a wild horse performance. You now have context. I wrote this to somebody's comment on Twitter this morning. You now have real context to what Barkley Tagg said coming up to the Belmont and in advance of the Belmont decision to go to the mile and an eighth and the timing. Barkley Tagg kept saying, and it seemed just incongruous, I'd be fine if they kept it at 12 furlongs. What? Well, now you know why. Because this horse, he knew that this horse was a classic distance and beyond natural. And how about Barkley and Robin Smulin and the niece that Heather, how about them and the whole team keeping this horse as finely tuned as
that's been one of the amazing things
since the winter? He has not, and seemingly getting better. A 109 buyer, by the way, if you have not heard, and that's a scary number. It's just amazing on all fronts.
And the final time, go look up. You can find all the Travers winners on Wikipedia. They have a nice list that has the final times. The 2 minutes point, what was
95.
It? 9. That final time, anything under 201, you got to go down that list and really look at Travers winners to find under a 201. So the final time labels him as more than legit.
Obviously. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, we look toward, Churchill now, and he's going to be, I don't know, what is he going to be?
I told you, as we went on, I pulled up the future pool wager. The future pool now has him at 4-5, and the next two closest are Art Collector at 10-1 and Honor AP at 10-1. Authentic is at 11-1, so a little bit of a spread there in the future pool between Tiz the Law and the next choices.
And closes today at 6. This is pool 7 of the Kentucky Derby future wager, and about 10 minutes after the pool closes, then the Ellis Park Derby goes off, which is, I saw some people complaining about that. You got to be ridiculous.
No, you want that if you like a horse.
Exactly. You don't want, you. It's unbelievable. But you got to think, the way to approach that pool now, given this performance, don't you have to try to figure out the exacta?
Yeah.
That's your play. And go looking for you know, some of the late running types, you know, the Commanding Curves of the world, the Steppenwolfers, the late runners in the Derby that, you know, come clunking up. You should be looking for a 50, 60, 70 to 1 shot on the future wager, because you can bet exactas. Don't lose sight of that.
Yeah, and really, you get past those three alternatives, the prices zoom up, so you think the exactas will be okay too.
Well, and then,
I'm not feeling so good about my all others from earlier this year.
I know that looked good until about, you know, until about 5:48 yesterday, or whatever time the race went off. Also, obviously, another big win for Constitution as a stallion. Maybe they should be giving out $100,000 bonuses for wins at Saratoga. But I'm bumped.
And New York Bread program, the sale
New
up
York
the street.
Breads, absolutely.
Unfortunately on hiatus
absolutely.
This year. But
tremendous. Yeah, tremendous.
Absolutely.
I guess the only thing missing from yesterday was, you know, the 38,000, 40,000 that could have enjoyed it in person. And I know people are enjoying it wherever they are, but... yesterday's atmosphere, in fact, at least there were a couple hundred people around that made it
more than any other day so
far.
Oh,
God, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Easily, yeah. Easily.
And there was some happy folks coming down the stretch. Some of the Saratoga partners were certainly screaming loudly and understandably so as the horse came down the stretch. Bruce Cerrone from Pinellas was over there, their social media person who also has a piece of the horse, and it was fun to kind of see them enjoying the afternoon as well, understandably. All right, switch gears and take a look at the test.
You bet.
Which was another huge performance. Again, I said a little bit earlier, last week was a little bit disappointing because of the poor start from Tom's Day Tot, the defeat from Midnight Bijou, but boy, the marquee performers lived up to the situation up here yesterday, and we'll watch the test from yesterday. Gamine, the number 5 horse, goes off at 30 cents to the dollar. The question mark would be, how would she hook up with Venetian Harbor? And they're 1-2 as they come under the wire. Again, Gamine, number 5 horse, Venetian Harbor, the number 6. Up in Smoke, who I think was an alternative for folks at 16-1, but can do no better than third. But Gamine, again, chart margin is 7 lengths in here, and she follows up that just eye-popping Acorn with another eye-popping performance in the test. One of my favorite races up here every year, and I think a race that really defines some very good horses. Another one, if you look at the winners list over the years, there have been some very nice performers that won this, and Gamine now not only adds herself to the list, but does it in a big way.
She gets a 108 buyer, and of course, you know, because of the era we live in, as race fans and horse players, immediately the demand went up for her to face males. What is the obsession? What is the compulsion for these horses? Just because a once-in-a-generation talent came along in Rachel Alexandra, it doesn't mean that every 3-year-old filly that is talented has to face the boys to somehow anoint themselves even greater than they're already, you know, demonstrating. This filly is really just magical. The question we don't know the answer to, and we probably, I did not see Baffert comments. Jimmy Barnes, who was back in town again after last week's successes, Jimmy was heading back home immediately last night after the race, and there's no, I don't know if she's a mile and an eighth Oaks guarantee. I'm anxious to talk to Baffert, and we'll see. I found it odd right from the get-go that he talked about the test off the Acorn, you know, to cut her back an eighth of a mile, to then stretch her back out to a now, or not back out, but out for the first time to a mile and an eighth. I don't know.
When I first got into the game, this was a prep for the Alabama. I mean, horses would come out of the test and go to the Alabama. Well, that's not really the case anymore.
That, after World War II, that's true, Seth. That's
it was a little later than that. A little bit.
She was dismissive of Venetian Harbor, and 7 lengths between her, Gamine and Venetian Harbor, and then another almost 7 to Up in Smoke and George Weaver with a very clever placement, and they get a grade 1 black type for up in smoke, and Luis Saez kind of rode to make sure that, that she was going to get that. I give Shug and you know, Mrs. Danvers credit. They tried with Mrs. Danvers to stay in contact with the top pair, and it kind of cost her. She ended up beating 7-8 lengths, ended up fifth, but this is a very, very talented filly, obviously, and now back-to-back grade ones. And Michael Lund-Peterson, it's funny how often, this is now, what, his third or fourth really good middle-distance one-turn horse, along with more spirit and the like. So, Gamin, I've used both Gamin and Venetian Harbor. I used both Tis the Law and Uncle Chuck, and that's how I approached the day. And, ended up, all things considered, with the winners. You talked about, didn't you, the pick five, and I thought paid very well, considering. And, of course, there was the DQ, which we're going to talk about.
I had, for the bankroll team, I had played an Empire Six. The DQ cost me the Empire Six, but I backed up an Empire Five using the horse that got moved up in the DQ. And you're right. And in the last three legs, I was 2 by 2 by 2. I said, I think it's going to play pretty logically in the last. It did, but yeah. But the first two legs of the pick five, you still got, I think, 380 for the pick five. The Empire Six paid 7-something. So, again, with some logicals in the last three legs, it was both sequences were paid decently for what could have been pretty relatively affordable tickets. All right, let's go back to the Weah a little bit earlier on the card, on the grass. It was going to be My Sister Nat and Mississippi who would attract the attention. They did. Mississippi did wind up the favorite at 7-5, at 2-1. It was My Sister Nat. I like My Sister Nat. And that one does get it done off the seasonal debut. Second place finished last time in the New York. My Sister Nat is the number four horse. Mississippi the number one. Fool's Gold runs third as the number seven horse. But the Chad Brown runner makes a nice late run and holds off the also late run from Mississippi.
Well, and there's a couple of things about this. You know, that performance of My Sister Nat, that performance downstate in the New York was sneaky good. You know, Mean Mary.
Yeah.
Mean Mary was setting, you know, pedestrian fractions in the New York and steals away. And so everybody behind, you know, beaten five lengths, it looks like, oh, okay, she was an also ran. So getting what you got on her, which was 5-2, I was very surprised. Mississippi off the layoff ended up favored in here 3-2. I thought that was a surprise. And I think Graham Motion was very pleased. I saw Graham coming out after the race. And I said, she ran very well. He was pleased. But My Sister Nat, I was shocked. I singled her in the multis and was delighted, you know, because it allowed me, frankly, to go 7-6 in the turf sprint and in the ballerina. The ballerina, to me, was more mysterious than it turned out. And it certainly didn't feel the ballerina like you were going to get a wire job. I mean, there was just so much speed, and the race that Serengeti Empress ran was stunning.
Yeah, we'll look at that in a minute. I like Serengeti. I was just a little unconscious yesterday. I like Serengeti Empress, but I agree that it was not an obvious pick there. She was going to have to get back to something. We'll look at it in a minute, but let's look at the DQ now with the Troy.
This is unfortunate.
I was a little bit unconscious with the selections yesterday. I went Imprimis. I said this race had all kinds of question marks on horses, and the eventual favorite was Chewing Gum, who had the question mark of the class move. So I had Chewing Gum a little bit down in the mix. I put Imprimis on top. I just thought the two workouts coming in might signal that Imprimis was going to get back to some better form, and did. Imprimis, the number one horse. Number two, American Sailor, runs second. Number four, Sheki Shabazz, gets the bump in the lane here that then leads to the DQ, and Chewing Gum runs fourth.
Watch there, right in the middle of the screen.
He's going to come in and hit Sheki Shabazz.
Hey now.
And then it bothers the horse that winds up fifth, too. And I think, you and I were talking before we went on the air, and I think we'll have the head on in a minute. When I first looked at this, I thought, yeah, I don't think so. To me, it was maybe 50-50 or less. The more I looked, the more I thought, I think they have to, because you can make the case, especially the chart margin of a head, that it cost Shecky Shabazz the second-place finish.
Well, here, let's watch this, and then we'll comment on it. And you know, a lot of people, of course, were immediately drawn to last week's conversation about the Bowling Green, and it is similar, but it's not identical. And you know, the question about holding a line and that portion of it, and you can see, you know, there were a few things contributing to that scrum. Last week, my complaint was that if you take down Sadler's Joy, why didn't you take down Therapist in the downstate in the first defense? In this particular setting, it's a little bit different. And under the letter of the law, when it comes to, as you say,
costing a position,
potentially costing a horse a placing, that warrants a DQ. You then get back to the basis that you're taking down a horse that was just obviously best,
yeah,
and you're penalizing bettors. You're penalizing, you know, Joe O and Breeze Easy. But you really can't have it both ways. And this is where this whole Class 1 rulings and changing the rules and letting things stand and then fining and suspending jocks is the way in which you implement instruction.
The thing is, there are shortcomings to that. I think there's shortcomings to any situation.
Yes, either, no matter
like
what
this,
you do.
Yeah.
Either way, because if you do that and you say, no matter what happens, the winner's the winner, well, isn't that an invitation for some guys to just come marauding through when there's no room and just knocking horses out of the way? And you say, okay, well, they'll get fined. And I'm sorry. That's just mayhem. And there's no room for that either. So I don't know if you're going to satisfy anything, no matter what direction we go as a racing officials. I do. Speaking of racing officials, I'll give you my annual screed on describing steward decisions and somehow indicting Naira. Naira did nothing. There's three stewards. One is there at the behest of Naira, one at the behest of the Jockey Club, and one from the New York Gaming Commission. Naira doesn't seat three judges. They're from three different entities. So the nonsense that goes on, Naira in New York race. It's just unbelievable. Every single time there's a decision or a non-decision, it's some sort of an indictment of how racing is run at the three New York tracks. There's three different entities placing stewards.
It's worth saying, actually, because I think a lot of people don't realize it's worth. We're in here so much and we follow the game, and probably most of our audience does too. But it's worth us occasionally, particularly at a place like Saratoga where we're getting new fans, to maybe go over some basics. I was out on Twitter the other day, and there was a photo, I think out at Del Mar, and the person was irate that the same picture was used for the win photo as was used for the show photo, and he thought he was getting ripped off because, wait a minute, it's the same picture. They're just moving the line. And so something's not wrong here. They didn't let them go out the extra 10 feet to get, I think I got third. And it was way down the Twitter feed where somebody finally said, no, you're looking at a point in time, not a point in space. Every nose there is on the line. The camera's on the line. But it's probably worth, again, going over some of those basics for people, because people don't realize, if they're new to the game, you just don't know some of those factors.
Well, my other favorite is, that's it. I'm never betting again. I'm giving up the game. I'll never bet Del Mar. I'll never bet Naira. I'll never bet Canterbury again and Fonner Park because I guess none of those people, every single photo goes against them and every single decision by the stewards goes against them. They've never been put up, ever. They've never won a photo, ever.
Yeah, the old, I'm never, and then about a week later, hey, hit the exact. Yeah.
A week later? What are you talking about? 27 minutes later.
Gotta love the Twitter. Gotta love the Twitter. All right, finally, let's take a look at the ballerina, because we alluded to it a few minutes ago, but boy, this was a nice performance by Serengeti Empress, the number one horse. And again, I'd put her on top just because...
Well, because you're Seth Merrill. You went 8 for 12 yesterday.
No, I'm admitting I was unconscious yesterday. And now I'm in the newspaper today, and I'm going to wipe out, I'm sure.
That's a tough card today.
But the workout attracted me, and the test last year, and I thought, given the workout, maybe she's going to remember what happened. And boy, you thought...
Look at her here.
Yeah, you
Look
thought she was going to get passed, and she just would not let him go by.
And it's funny. She's just clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety. She is... It's unbelievable. This is Tom Amos couldn't be with us today, and I'm really sorry. We'll talk to Tom on radio tomorrow. What a job by Tom. And, you know, she is a funny horse. This is a horse that, you know, when she gets beat, she gets drubbed. And don't say, well, she has to have the lead and she... Yes, she wins. She wins with one particular style. When she turns in this kind of an effort, it's just remarkable, and she's done it from 7/8 to 9 furlongs. I got to tell you, I bet Victim of Love. I thought Todd Beatty, who won the Vagrancy downstate, I thought we're going to get another price in here on her. And when you see a filly, you know, a mare, you know, when they get that breakthrough, and you can see she was moving forward, Todd Beatty knows what to do to win up here. He had Fabulous Strike. When they turned for home, and I saw that rail open, it was exactly the way we kind of drew it up, at least in my mind. And
top of the stretch, I thought she was going to go by. I thought Bellafina was going to go by,
and she wasn't good enough to get to Serengeti. And Bellafina had, and I guess we can put away, at least for now, we can put away
that
Bellafina can't run outside of California. Yeah. Because it took a spectacular effort from the winner, from Serengeti Empress.
A 98 buyer on Serengeti Empress.
Yes, and you know who Sneaky ran a solid race in there, and she kind of lifted her head. I thought that Carlos Martin, I thought that Come Dancing was going to, you know, maybe snap back, and I was expecting an A performance from her, and I thought she ran, you know, very credibly. Depending on what Gamin does when it comes to the filly and mare sprint. I mean, let's see what happens at Churchill in a few weeks in the, I never remember anymore which it is, if the La Troyenne or the other one. They switched the names on us.
Oh, the La Troyenne is coming up.
Yeah, they're both coming up, one was a sprint.
Oh, one.
Yeah, the La Troyenne, I think, was the sprint, and they made it into the route. So I either way, the 7/8 race.
Oh, La Troyenne has to be the longer one because I think Monomoy Girl is getting pointed to the La Troyenne.
Okay, there you go. So the other race, the Eight Bells? Eight Bells is for the 3-year-olds. I'm losing track. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Gamin if she's. I suppose if she goes in the Oaks and isn't up to the 9 furlongs, then she'll cut back for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, at which point she becomes a prohibitive favorite.
Absolutely. Another storyline up here, just before we head to a break, the human side of things. Currently on the jockey side, Irod one ahead of his brother Jose. Joel Rosario sitting. Irod with 31, Jose with 30. Joel Rosario 27, and then we have a break back to tie for fourth with Manny Franco and Javier Castellano with 12. On the trainer side, it's really interesting this year. Christoph Clement and Todd Pletcher now tied with 15, Mike Maker with 14, and Chad Brown with 11. These are, so far over the first 4 weeks, these have been a lot of fun to watch. Hopefully it plays out that way as the meet continues.
Another on the human front. Brian, if you've got the pictures that I put up yesterday at Facebook and Twitter, I'd like to slip this in here before we get too far afield. Steve Haskins is going to join us, by the way, and we'll get his Derby watch and his Derby dozen thoughts. Chance to visit with Steve. But yesterday, the second race, and with conditions the way they are, we can't gather in the winner's circle when there's ceremonies and when there's various opportunities to appreciate and honor memories. It was a year yesterday that the racing community in New York and NYRA lost Carmen Barrera, and we wanted to make sure people appreciated. There she is with Tina, and that was a Belmont. Was that a Belmont day? It seems kind of cold for a Belmont day, but might have been in the fall. But I think it was a Belmont day. There's Elise Jacobs in the back, but losing Carmen without warning as we did last year, and she's missed every day by owners that come and come and visit and make their way to the boxes, and for anybody that comes from out of town, her smile and her accommodating nature, and also her occasionally irascible self is just missed on a going basis. So there she is in her Belmont office with Tina. That was definitely a Belmont day, and we were just thinking about Carmen yesterday, and I know everybody, there were so many nice responses, and everybody
very good.
Misses Carmen terribly.
All right, we'll take a break. As we said, Steve Haskin will join us on this day after the Travers for a little three-year-old conversation and more, so stay tuned. Loose on the Lead continues.
The New York hero, Tiz the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
When New York bred Tiz the Law won the 2020 Belmont Stakes, OTB TV was live with owner Jack Nolan to capture all the excitement.
And certainly, seeing what he did today, we think a mile and a quarter is well within his range, and hopefully he can prove it at Saratoga Racecourse.
For exclusive interviews and racing information, stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV and win more.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
I got it. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about.
We're back on Loose on the Lead on this post-Travers Sunday. And who better to join us on Zoom, like every other broadcast seems to be of late. Steve Haskin, down in Jersey, was watching from afar. And Steve, here we go again. Off to the Derby. Get that crazy school bus. And the Sacatoga team and Barkley tag. Tis the law, Steve. What a performance.
Well, you know what's unbelievable is that they're getting the school bus ready. All different people except for Jack and I think one other person. Everybody else is new. So it's a whole different gang. But, I have to say that was very, very impressive. Very impressive. You had to love the way he did it. I mean, you got to figure, who's going to beat this horse in the Derby? We'll see what Art Collected, does. But right now, I mean, this is the quintessential Derby horse if I ever saw one.
We end up, Steve, from a figure standpoint, a 109 buyer, and of course, we can't compare a August 3-year-old mile and a quarter figure with Derby time per se, but it still is the top figure that any 3-year-old has run going past a mile and an eighth. And I said earlier, it really put into context this performance at a mile and a quarter. It really gave context to Barkley back in May and June saying, I'd be comfortable going a mile and a half with him at Belmont. And I guess now we know why, that he was a classic distance horse in the waiting all along.
Well, you know what's unique about him this year is that he's the only horse that has remained on schedule for what every race has been planned exactly the way Barkley had scheduled it. You look at all the other horses, you look at Honor AP, and you look at horses like Art Collector, who popped out of nowhere, and you look at Caracaro, who popped out of nowhere after a 6-month layoff. All the horses running in the Ellis Park Derby, they've all had to deviate from whatever kind of plan that they originally had, which is why you have so many horses going into the Derby off of unbelievable layoffs that you normally wouldn't consider. 8-week layoffs, 11-week layoffs, 4-month layoffs. But he's going in exactly the way Barkley had planned it, going all the way back to last year's Champagne when he said, no Breeders' Cup Juvenile. We're pointing for the Derby starting right now.
Now, it seems very much like a scenario where you're going to have to manufacture a scenario that beats him. And, of course, one of the things that people are going to talk about for lack of other, potential dents in the fender is the performance at Churchill in the Kentucky Jockey Club. Wet track, traffic issue, etc. Younger horse, less experienced. People are going to be using that as, how do you beat Tis the Law? And they're going to point to that effort, Steve. Expand on that and how different is he now from back in November last year?
Well, anybody who's going to expand on that really has no clue what they're talking about, because that race means nothing at all. Like you said, not only was it a sloppy track, not only was he stuck behind horses the whole way, not only was this only his third start of his life, but just watch when he's in between horses in a stretch, he completely loses his action. And he still only gets beat 3/4 of a length. I mean, he loses his action completely, has no stride to him. So that race is a total throwout. As soon as the race was over, I said, ignore this race. It's a total, total throwout race. It has nothing to do with Churchill Downs at all.
Steve, let me ask you this. This is an interesting question given the scenario this year, too. I've heard both points of view. Is the Triple Crown a harder task this year given the spacing and some of the late starters get to play this year where normally they wouldn't? Or is the Triple Crown going to be an easier accomplishment this year?
To answer that bluntly, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's tough to say.
I mean, who knows? Do we really know? I mean, some people would say, well, he's basically going through an ordinary campaign that does not ask to do anything extraordinary, like winning the Derby and the Preakness within 2 weeks of each other and then having the 3 races in 5 weeks. That's something that's never done anywhere else in horse racing other than the Triple Crown. What he's going through now is a normal routine where he's running every several months. He looks like he's the experienced horse in the Derby. He's had four races this year in 8 months. That's experience nowadays. So is it harder? I mean, to win all these races, including the so-called Belmont Stakes and then the Travers, then the Derby, then the Preakness, that's hard in its own way to maintain that form and to maintain your soundness. But from a racing standpoint, it's still much harder to ask a horse to go a mile and a quarter against 19 horses in the first Saturday in May, come back in 2 weeks, and then come back in 3 weeks in a mile and a half, than it is to spread it out, because the trainer now can train him the way he wants to train him. Trainers cannot train their horses the way they want to in the span of the Triple Crown.
Steve, the potential accomplishment here is different. The accomplishment that is going to be held up, especially if he is able to follow this up with a win in Louisville, is the potential to win a Travers, a Derby, a Preakness, and a Breeders' Cup, essentially 4 mile-and-a-quarter races in a row. I mean, obviously won a mile and 3/16, but the potential to win those four races in succession, then fold in what went on in the first half of the year, including Belmont, where would that fit? Where would that essentially, you know, be anointed as an accomplishment in racing history?
Well, it's going to be a standalone accomplishment, because the way he did it has never been done, obviously, and never ever will be done. So, listen, the closest horse to come to sweeping all those races would be obviously American Pharoah. So you got to give him an awful lot of credit there. You know, if he had won the Travers and then come back and won the Breeders' Cup Classic. But like I said, the timing is all wrong as far as these horses are concerned. There would have been no schedule planning. So, yeah, it would be a tremendous accomplishment, but we have nothing to compare it to. And, you know, the thing you look at the Travers, too, by the way, is that when they went ahead from 48-1, this horse has such a high cruising speed. That was it. I was telling my wife, watching the race, they were like passing the 5/8 pole, and I said, this race is over. I said, Uncle Chuck's not going to win on the lead with him dogging him the way he did. 48-1, when he's able to use his cruising speed, he comes home basically 24 every quarter after that, whether 23 and change or 24-1. So you can't beat a horse like that. I mean, you just can't. The race set up perfectly for him, and he just did it so easily. And you have to remember, too, by the way, he's only the sixth horse in 156 years to break 201 for the Travers. And you know one of the other horses who did it? Was a New York bred.
It's a Thunder Rumble, yeah.
Nice.
A Thunder Rumble.
Yeah. Nice. And a couple of points out of this, actually, in terms of the running of the race that we haven't brought up yet. The scratch of First Line changed the complexion of this race a little bit, because the plan had been, apparently, from Noda, to obviously light out from the one hole. And perhaps under that scenario, Uncle Chuck doesn't have to, you know, go to the lead. And I'm curious, and I know what you're referencing, Steve, that had there been a faster pace that Manny Franco and Tis the Law have to chase, does that take something out of him for the second half? Instead, he's able to essentially just set up shop and then take over and cruise away. And, you know, we don't have the exact setup of 20 for Derby yet. We'll know more later on today at about 6:15 after they run at Ellis. But it does. You do get the sense that if he's got to be mid-pack, if there's going to be a lot of speed and he's, you know, mid-pack early, that's fine, too. I was very impressed with the way this unfolded, but I guess I didn't take into consideration until bringing up First Line how the race changed. Or do you think that Uncle Chuck and Baffert and Johnny wanted the lead under any circumstance.
Well, let's put it this way. First line doesn't really have that much kind of speed. I mean, he just broke his maiden going long. The way I looked at it, if he had gone to the lead, he would have lasted a quarter of a mile. Uncle Chuck would have blown right by him after a quarter of a mile. I don't think it would have made any difference. I don't think we would have had a fast pace. I don't think first line was capable of going fast. So, I mean, Uncle Chuck, listen, that was asking an awful lot of him to go
yes.
a mile and a quarter, ship cross country in his third start of his life, running against, you know, small fields and inferior competition in California. So he was asking an awful lot. I know he's a big, long striding horse, but he really wasn't ready for this. But if first line was in there, I don't see really any changes in this scenario. If they were determined to go to the lead, they would have gone to the lead, and as soon as Velasquez wanted to, he would have blown right by him.
No, fair enough. Let's turn our attention, Steve, to this afternoon. Some thoughts about Art Collector, who kind of is going into it in the same way.
Saez, I mean.
Yes. But Art Collector going into this Ellis Park very much the way Tis the Law went into yesterday.
And I'm looking for a pretty similar performance. I mean, I don't think the race really came up that tough. There's a few good horses in there. But if he's going to threaten Tis the Law in the Derby, he's going to have to put in a pretty good performance here. And if he gets beat, he's got to have a pretty good excuse. Now, again, this is just a step forward. He doesn't really need to do anything dramatic here. You know, he's already shown what he can do in the Bluegrass Stakes. So all he needs is a good, solid race. If he runs his race, he should beat these horses anyway. But if somebody should step up and run some monster race or steal a race, and they don't really try 100% with him, and he runs a good second, then he'll move forward off of it. But again, just like Honor AP and the Shared Belief, I don't care if he was 80%. To me, he should have beaten that field. And the way this race set up, Tis the Law certainly should have won this race, and Art Collector should win the Ellis Park Derby. Now, again, if he's like Honor AP, if something comes up and he doesn't run his race, as long as he runs a good race and is closing at the end, you still got to give him a shot in the Derby. But, boy, it's going to take a monster effort to beat Tis the Law coming back at a mile and a quarter.
Yeah, after yesterday's performance, who do you look at as the alternatives? Pulled up the Derby future yesterday, the betting public, by a wide margin, Tis the Law currently on the future pool is 4-5. But at 10-1, Authentic, Honor AP, and Art Collector are sitting right in the 10-1 to 11-1 range. They're the current alternatives for the betting public. Talk a little bit about what you're looking at as a potential, you know, behind Tis the Law currently.
I think there's a lot of horses that are capable of running a good race in the Derby and finishing in the money. I think there's no more than maybe two, possibly three horses that actually have a shot to beat him in the Derby. Because I don't think there's a lot of depth here, as far as high-quality depth. After you get to the top three or four horses, if Art Collector wins, he obviously has a shot to win the Derby. Honor AP, even though I wasn't crazy about his race, the way it was run, where Frank Smith decided to make two runs with him, and he's the kind of horse you cannot make two moves with. He's a big, long, striding horse. I think that first move on the first turn to lap onto 1,000 words took a lot out of him as far as trying to sustain his second move. So I think if Sheriff puts a lot of work into him, and he's certainly capable of training a horse up to the Derby, he still is capable of winning the race. After those three, I don't see anybody who's capable of actually winning the race. Mm-hmm. I think Caracaro is going to move forward. He, you know, as I've been telling Steve on the show,
yep.
You know, I've had sort of a personal connection with this horse back since January, and I thought he ran an excellent race because I thought Max Play was going to run right by him at the quarter pole, and he still kept going. He was beaten 5.5 lengths, which is okay. You know, it was only his fourth start of his life, going 1.25 miles and finishing second to Tis the Law. He's going to move forward the Derby. Whether he's capable of actually beating Tis the Law, that's another question, but I think he's capable of moving forward and running a big race in the Derby. I'm not a huge fan of Authentic as a Derby horse. I still think he's a mile to mile and an eighth horse. He tried very hard to lose that Haskell when he had everything his own way. He doesn't have the pedigree. He's speed on top, speed on the bottom. For him to win the Derby, I just don't see him going a mile and a quarter. After that, you have the usual bunch of closers. You know, you have the Enforceables and the Major Feds and the Sol Volantes and, you know, any one of those horses can pop up and run big in the Derby. Usually, and a lot of times, as I mentioned to Steve on the show, I listed all the horses that ran second in the Derby at 30 to 1 or more who, you know, were closing at the end. So this year looks like a year that, like that can happen. But as far as actually beating him, I mean, I don't know. Can you name a horse in that pack, in that mid pack of Derby contenders that you feel can actually beat this horse? I mean, look at a horse like King Guillermo. He's got the talent to win, but 4 months? I don't know how he's been working lights out in Florida. But if he wasn't ready for any preps, and he's got to go in off a 4 month layoff, God, I mean, yeah. You're really bucking history there. That's a long way off to go a mile and a quarter in a 20 horse field or whatever they draw. But he's got the talent to win. But again, he doesn't have the schedule to win. You know, Soli Volante, they're going straight into the Derby. Major Fed, they're going straight into the Derby. Both of those horses really belonged in the Ellis Park Derby. Just to take him a step forward. I don't know. You guys see anybody who can win the Derby this year?
Not after yesterday.
No, I mean, I thought that, you know, based on what we were going to see yesterday and today, we would get a decision as to who would be favored, Art Collector or Tis the Law. I think even if Art Collector, you know, runs his A race, and I don't see how it's going to supersede this performance, because, of course, you got the mile and a quarter as, you know, sort of the, you know, already in the pocket positive. You know, after that,
Art Collector has one thing going in his favor, is that's his home track.
That's true. No, I think your top three are defined. You laid it out too. Tis the Law, Art Collector, and Honor AP. And then after that, it's a grab bag of mystery meat. It's just they're all, you know, we'll get down to who's training well and that kind of thing, and try to find. The Dallas Stewart horse, if Dallas doesn't actually have one. And winning impression might be.
Perfect. But the thing is, you know what this crop of horses is lacking is brilliance.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them are one-paced horses or come from behind horses that are not that consistent. They don't win that much. So I don't see a horse like that beating Tis the Law and Art Collector. And even, you know, Honor AP, Caracaro at least has some kind of brilliance to him.
Yes.
Because he runs close to the pace, and he keeps going. And he's going to only get better, and he's got a pedigree to go a mile and a quarter. So he's got the right formula. But very few of these horses have the right formula to win the Derby. They're not fast enough.
Just looking, actually, Steve, at the working list in front of me, Tis the Law, Authentic, Honor AP, New York Traffic, Art Collector, King Guillermo, Thousand Words, Dr. Post, Max Player, Caracaro, Country Grammar, Enforceable. Swiss Skydiver is 13th on the points list, and we'll see what McPeak might, you know, reconsider, but she's got to be the depending on what happens with Gamine too. But Swiss Skydiver, it looks like, I don't see how Ralph Nix goes to the Derby with Chivalry.
No way.
Not off of that effort. It looks like Rushy is back in the picture for Michael McCarthy. Then you've got Major Fed, Ann O'Dor, of course, running this afternoon.
Well, where is Rushy running? I mean, he wasn't in the Shared Belief or anything. He wasn't in the Ellis Park Derby, so he's also going to train into the Derby over a long layoff?
All I can tell you is that on Darren Rogers' release last night, Rushy suddenly, who had a dash next to his name, suddenly he had a number by his name. And, you know, some horses that had been under consideration, et cetera, were already crossed off by Darren. And so Darren and Kevin, keeping track of who's going to run and who isn't. Some horses
Excuse me, Steve, there's one horse you mentioned that really does have the potential. I would move him closer than the others.
Enforceable.
I don't know if he can win the Derby, but a horse like New York Traffic at least has the tactical speed, and he never backs up.
Yep.
He's always running strong at the end. Even in the last four races, you got 3 seconds in the third. If you watch his stride, he's not backing up. He's got a good, strong extension to his stride at the end of the race. He's got the pedigree. He's a little bit too one-paced for me to think he could actually win the race, but he could certainly make his presence felt in the Derby. So if I was going to rank anybody right up, you know, right behind those top four, it would be New York Traffic based on his consistency and his tactical speed, and he's going to be right up there with the pace.
A quick note on today. Let's mention, Steve, also, for those that are watching the point standings, we're looking at 50, 20, 10, and 5 as points. And right now, 25 points, Pneumatic is sitting as the 20th horse. Maybe even, there's a couple of others at 20, so even if a couple of horses drop out, Shared Sense right now, who's running today from the 12 hole, he's got 20. Winning Impression has got 20.
Well, Steve, can I just jump in here for a second? Pneumatic is running in the Pegasus at Monmouth.
So he's going to end up having further chances for points. So he probably, you know, wouldn't take much at that point for him to ensure a start in the Derby. Winning Impression sitting 25th right now. Attachment Rate is 27th with 15 points. Necker Island 30th with 4 points. So a second would at least put Necker Island within striking distance. The horse that's hoping for everybody to fall apart is Cheryl Spite with 0. And Cheryl Spite would need everybody to demur to get into the Derby.
Thing is, none of those horses you mentioned can win the Derby.
I'm just telling you, who's out there.
They're all nice horses, but they're not in Tis the Law's class, and they're probably not in our collector's class. Well, we'll see what happens today.
I'm not as convinced as you are that there's going to be 20. Well, Steve and I were on the radio the other day. You're down for 20. I'll ask you, Steve Haskin, do you think that we're looking at a 20-horse field?
I think if the trainers are look at it in a logical way, we shouldn't be. But it's still the Derby.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to want to pop. And it's like, look, Steve's going down to number 30 on the list. I think anybody who can get into the Derby, they want to be part of it.
Yeah.
Now, is it going to be the same with, you know, with very few or maybe no people there? It's not going to have that same atmosphere. But, you know, it's still the Derby, whether it's a September Derby or not. It's not the Derby as we know it. But of all the horses you mentioned, by the way, I'm still not ruling out Pneumatic. I still think he's got a lot of upside to him. A lot of things went against him in these last couple of races, and he still ran well enough. Again, he's got the pedigree. He has very, very few flaws, and he should improve. So he's a horse that I would sort of put right up there in the second tier.
You know, Steve, one thing that Pneumatic might have going for him, he doesn't tire.
He'll be all here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
He could blow up the tote.
That's something that I would say.
Steve, this was wonderful.
How long have you been waiting to use that one?
I literally can't, like this. Like, actually, Lenny texted it to me, actually. I'll give Lenny. No, that was all me. Steve, this was wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, it was my pleasure. It's good seeing human beings.
When are you coming back up?
I'm not sure yet. We got to wait for schedule because to see when we can go to Connecticut, and you know, we'll just wait and see what Avi and Rhoda's schedule is. What's a good day? But we'll be coming back up. Lenny comes up in a week from Monday.
Yes,
for the final 3 weeks of the meet. So we definitely want to be up there when he's there.
Well, then we'll save a live, breathing Steve Haskin and Lenny Shulman visit for that occasion.
You can't beat those. You know how many people are still saying how much they miss and they're off? It's amazing.
Well, the Tuesday, things may manifest them. You want to plug your big reveal on Thursday?
Well,
Tuesday?
I gave my word that I wouldn't.
No, you just plug it.
Very, it's a very esoteric website, and it's dealing more with horse people than it is with bettors and gamblers. But there will be. Listen, I'm already starting on the Derby Dozen. Even though I got to use another name, I can't use Derby Dozen. But I've got two more coming, including now and then one right before the Derby. So that continues. And my first column will be up on Tuesday as well.
Is there future book wagering? Can we wager on where you're landing?
You can if you want. If you can find a bookie crazy enough to take it.
I'm going to put 100. I'm putting 100 on Chronicle of the Horse.
They still publish that.
Oh, all right. That was a non-denial denial.
No, I'm just saying, Chronicle of the Horse, that publication's like 150 years old.
Well,
This is more esoteric than that.
All right. So Chronicle, all right. So you just saved me 100. I'm going to back off that.
So what, we find out for certain?
Tuesday.
On Tuesday. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
We'll
that's because that's when the press release comes out. So I can't beat an official press release.
The Haskins sweepstakes, everybody. Bigger than the Irish sweepstakes. Steve, thank you. We'll look forward to, I'll talk to you on the radio, obviously, but we'll look forward to Tuesday and where Derby demonstrations is going to land.
Hey, listen, let's put it this way. I am very excited about it.
Good.
I'm excited with who I'm working with, and I'm excited of the audience, and I'm just excited to be a part of this.
Absolutely. We were excited to look at you.
I'm excited to get back into the picture. Listen, if I had nowhere to write right now, you know, I'd be writing all my stuff about Tis the Law on my living room wall,
like a padded cell. Steve Haskin, everybody, thanks so much.
Appreciate it, Steve.
My pleasure, guys. Good seeing you.
That was fun. That was fun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That was just what we were looking for.
No question about it. No question about it. We can wrap things up now, but before we wrap things up, we talked about it. Obviously, Ellis Park Derby today. You mentioned there's a cross-country pick five, including Ellis races.
Yes, the cross-country today is Ellis 8, 9, and 10, which is the Audubon Oaks, the Groupie Doll, and the Ellis Park Derby. And the races here are the 7th and 8th, that filly and mare, $40,000 non-winners at 2, where there's two, you know, very obvious players in Otney Dean and Nomi Momai. Then the first level allowance going a mile and an eighth on the turf, where I thought City Man was potentially a single. Small budget in today's Empire Pick 6, I think I'm singling City Man.
Anyway.
So take a look at that. Yesterday, the Sequence paid $950 with the three Woodbine races 8, 9, and 10. You had a $24 winner, an $11 winner, and then a 2-1 winner. You had a favorite, you had a, looks like a second choice, and then you had a pretty good long shot that started at fact checking. So other than that, I mean, you did have the two very, you know, the very obvious players,
out.
My Sister Nat and Tis the Law. I mean, you could have gone narrow in the Saratoga races and spread a little bit more in the Woodbine races to catch yesterday's cross-country pick five, which does a great job. And so there's lots of good action. The Empire pick six, you heard Seth earlier. In terms of my approach, if there's a horse to look out for, I thought that... the stake, by the way, Tenfold is scratched out of the Aladar.
Oh, okay.
You know, Bodie Express is going to be out there winging, I imagine, and could be a little loose.
All relevant might go as well, though.
Well, it's all relevant. It's got a terrific workout coming into this off of a couple of good workouts off of the DRF Clocker report. So I'm respectful, actually, of a few in there. And I thought that Shannon's Girl, the Gullo, in the 7th race might be a C to consider. The 6th race, the first level allowance, which was very competitive, You know, secondary market, what'd you do with Chad in that race?
I put him on top, just I'm hoping there's a little two-year-old to three-year-old improvement.
Well, exactly. If you fold in the natural improvement you get, you know, there's no reason why secondary market, you know, doesn't move forward quite a bit. That race is very interesting because you've got three first-out winners. Escape Fund was a first-out winner. Paleo Flag for Asmussen was a first out, and Henry's Deal at Los, at Lone Star. Henry's Deal, Robertio Diodoro brings this one up from Texas. You don't ship a horse from Texas if, you know, for a $74,000 pot. You don't do that unless you think the horse has got the talent to
compete.
Working
well, too.
Right?
Yeah.
So, FYI, it's a really good sequence today. This pick, this Empire Six, 20 cents, and there's over $1.3 million. You got to figure this thing blows past $5 million, right?
Oh, easily, I think.
$5.5 million, $6 million.
Yeah.
All right, there it is.
I would think so. All right, a big Sunday following a big, big Saturday. Hopefully, we caught you up on all of that Saturday action. And
Brian, do you have the other pictures I sent or no? Put this up for a second because I want to give King's Dairy a push. For those, it was so funny. Somebody bacon.
We have not had our weekly food. That was a regular last year.
Here it is.
Bacon Buzz ice cream. All right.
All right. That's King's Dairy. For those of you up by Bacon Hill, I usually tell everybody to go to Winnie's to pick blueberries. You know, just down the road from Winnie's is King's, and the King brothers, the family. They've got an amazing, amazing spread. Yeah, they also do beef. That's me with a peach cone.
That looks good.
Huh?
Looks good.
It's funny. Peach. I'm kind of a sucker for peach. Peach and banana. When you get the opportunity. Right. So King, go out to King's Dairy. It's underappreciated. We've got you know me with ice cream. I'm ridiculous.
Well, bacon. The old Jim Gaffigan, the bling, with the bacon. So
well, bacon bourbon flavored ice cream with bacon. Huh?
I'm there.
All right.
I'm there. I'm gonna give it.
King
a try.
Brothers.
All right, we're gonna wrap it up for this edition of Loose on the Lead because, well, for us we're probably a little early. I was gonna say we're late, but for us maybe we're early. But it was a jam packed. Post Travers Show, Seth Merrow, Steve Vick.
Which is amazing because we had nothing at about 10 of 10. Luckily, you don't get to see the sausage made. But virtually everybody, whether it was Dave Grenig and Mike Welch that were over at Turf Works.
I mean, this year it's tough to begin
you
with.
You can't
get
people.
Back
we can't
here,
get them. We got to put them over the fence. It's like Stalag 17 around here. And there's Schultz over there. We can't get people back here, and almost everybody was. You know, was tied up. It was unbelievable. We were going to get Tim Layden, and then he left town.
Turfworks makes the trainers tough.
Yeah, it's very tough.
But next week, coming from under the stage here, William Holden. He'll do a little styling. All right, we're going to wrap it up for this edition of Loose on the Lead every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. We'll be back in as far as the morning programming when we resume racing here at Saratoga next Wednesday, 9 a.m. on Wednesday with the handicapper support. But obviously, plenty of good racing on the network this afternoon, tomorrow, and Tuesday as well. But as far as here on the backstretch, back in on Wednesday morning. Enjoy the racing in the meantime. We'll see you then.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Vick and Seth Merrow. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by